Okay, we're going to continue this study of the theme for this class, which is the Christian and his influence. The Christian and his influence. I know you've heard several lessons on this very important and very intriguing subject. And this morning we're going to go to Matthew chapter 5 and look in verses 14 through 16, but we're going to go a lot further than that. But it is the title of this lesson this morning, which is You Are the Light of the World. As you can see, we don't have the luxury of having the overhead projector. I didn't do any PowerPoint presentation, so we're going to have to go back to those good old days when we just opened up the Bible and turned pages and read the Bible together. So turn with me to Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse number 14. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 14. Jesus is speaking and he says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Look at what Jesus is saying. Keep in mind, we're going to make this lesson centered around the theme of this class, influence, the Christian and his influence. Jesus says that you are the light of the world. He takes away any notion that that is an option. It is not for us to be able to decide whether or not we're going to be a positive, righteous influence in someone's life, because he says that you are. And the you that he's talking to is referring to whom? Christians. Okay? There was that multitude that was gathered there, but when Jesus went up on that mound and he sat down and the disciples came around him, he was addressing whom? The multitude? He was addressing the disciples. The multitude overheard these things, but when Jesus said, "You are the light of the world," he made that statement very exclusive. Okay? And just as it was exclusive to them, it is exclusive to us, because he was addressing those that have already pledged their allegiance, their love, and their obedience to him. And he takes that option out of saying that, well, you know, I can, and I've heard this, I can be an influence, or I don't necessarily have to be. Okay? We can't take a day off from being a Christian. And you can best believe, once someone identifies you as being a Christian, we're in a fishbowl, and you're going to be not targeted, but you're going to be watched very, very closely with everything that you say, everything that you do, the way you dress. Just about every aspect of your life is going to be under the microscope. Okay? And Jesus says that, understand that you are going to be the light of the world. Colossians chapter 1 tells us and describes the world as a place of darkness. And in that place of darkness, we understand that once light enters, light and darkness cannot occupy the same space. Light will always dominate the immediate space around it. Brother Winkler, in his book titled The Christian and His Influence, he lists 14 different characteristics of light and what light does: purifies, cleanses, reveals, illuminates. We're not going to go through those, but I believe that we can look at light in two ways. Okay? We can categorize it in two ways. Number one, light allows one to see. And number two, light allows one to be seen. You think about an automobile, okay? This automobile has those two headlights, and it has that dome light in the interior of the car. Those really are the only two lights in an automobile that allows one to see. There are a number of lights on all four sides of a car that allows for you to be seen as a driver. Okay, and this engineer several years ago came up with what he thought was a great idea, and it turned out to be a pretty good idea. In fact, he decided that in order to help drivers and to be able to cut down on accidents, we'll make the lights stay on all the time, even during the daytime. Daytime running lights is what he came up with. Okay? And statistics showed that once that happened, that the number of accidents actually went down because drivers said in several surveys that were done that it allowed them to be able to see oncoming traffic. Now, why it took so many years for us to come up with that technology is beyond me, but it works. And this is what Jesus is saying. Jesus is saying, understand that you're going to be on display all the time. But being on display is not a bad thing, because we're going to be able to impact people's lives by the way that we communicate with people, by the way that we portray ourselves when we're out in public. We must be a light unto not only those out in that world, but to our family, to those in the community, to those that we have a loving interest in, each other. Okay? And I love this part of Scripture when it talks about influence. And on a personal level, I believe this is the most comprehensive single lesson in all of the Bible when it talks about the Christian and his influence. What we've come to know and love as the Sermon on the Mount. Because he didn't just tell us that we are to be the light of the world and be a positive influence. He goes through in very specific detail and tells us the reason why, and he tells us how we're going to do it. Okay? And I think about those teenagers that are around 15 or 16 or so, when they get to that point, I don't know about your teenagers, but I know mine. When they got to that point, they wanted their independence. And they knew everything. And they felt as though that, you know, no one could tell them anything. And I am so glad that I got beyond it. You know, and speaking from a spiritual aspect, if we took that attitude, which so many people do, sadly, that I don't need anybody to tell me and dictate to me how my life should be or the type of person that I should be. If we don't get beyond that way of thinking, we're going to find ourselves in a situation where we're going to be among the lost. Because what Richard talked about last week, as far as that salt, If it loses its flavor, what happens? It's cast away. Okay? And we need to make righteousness as much a part of our lives to the point that it becomes a habit. It's something that we don't even think about. And if we look at what Jesus is talking about, he says that there are two things that I want you to get out of this. That you're going to be a positive influence by allowing your light to shine by your good works and by glorifying your Father. Those are the two things that's going to happen as a result of allowing yourself to be that positive influence. It takes away also the notion of being fearful. Some people just, you know, decide that this is too much. I'm just going to come on Sunday mornings, and I'm not talking about anybody in particular. I'm just going to come on Sunday mornings. I'm going to come on Wednesday nights. I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to sing. I'm going to pray. I'm going to participate. But that's about it. Growing up, we called them Sunday Christians. And for the most part, just me thinking off the top of my head, most of those people that I remember growing up that way, before I became an adult, had left the church. We have to be that positive influence. And Jesus says that fear is not a part of it. He says you're not going to hide that light. Okay? You're going to be proud of the fact that you are a Christian, that you've pledged your allegiance to me. Not in a haughty way, not that I'm you know, a better than thou sort of way, but I am very happy. I'm not ashamed of the fact that I'm a Christian. I'm different. I'm peculiar. You know? And it's very, very encouraging to know that I got 460 people that meet here in this place that's of the same mindset. We're all in the same race. We're all trying to get to heaven, and we're all bound by the words that are written in this book. Jesus said in verse number 17, he says, "Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill." In order for us to be a positive influence in the lives of people that we come in contact with, we're going to have to understand and know the scriptures. And the Old Testament is one of the most misunderstood and confusing parts of all the Bible. If you don't believe so, talk to anybody in a denominational organization. It's to the point that if we don't confront out of love some of the things that are being taught, we're almost supporting some of the rhetoric that comes out of these denominational organizations. We can't deny that the opportunities are there. It's just a matter of us deciding to take on those opportunities and do something about it. Look at what he says in verse 19. He says, "Whoever therefore breaks one of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he will be called great in the kingdom of heaven." It says, not only must we understand the Old Testament and where he fits into the Old Testament, and he is that bridge that brings us to the New Testament, he says we must also become teachers. We can't take that information and just sit on our hands and say, well, that's it. I'm saved. I did what I needed to do. Now it's up to you to do what you have to do. He says that we must become teachers. And in John chapter 5 and verse 46, when Jesus is talking to those Jews, Jesus said, "You believe in Moses," which they did, and they held Moses in very high regard, deservedly so. But Jesus says, "You believe in Moses, you must believe in me, because I am the one that Moses was talking about in his writings." So the Old Testament is just as important for us to understand in being able to communicate with people about the most important thing that we can talk about, which is salvation, because Jesus is in the Old Testament. Jesus is there from the very beginning. And if we're going to be that positive influence, we have to take that upon ourselves to say, I'm going to study. I'm going to show myself and make myself approved unto God by being able to understand and know how to rightly divide the word of truth. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15, I believe. I know I'm talking a lot, but if you want to jump in, just jump right in. I got a lot of stuff I want to cover. I doubt if we get to it, but, you know, I'm flexible. We can talk a lot more. Anyway, he continues on and he talks about now the matter of the heart. Okay, he talks about murder and he talks about adultery. And what must exist in order for a person to be guilty of murder?
Premeditation.
Okay, premeditation. The intent must be there. Okay? The intent must be there. Also with adultery, Jesus is saying that the intent is there. You have made up in your mind before the act itself what it is that you're going to do. And Jesus says at that point, you have allowed yourself to become subject to temptation. And eventually, if you do nothing about it, what happens? You go ahead and do it. Okay? And what kind of message does that send to the rest of the world when somebody that is identified as a Christian is out committing murder, is out committing adultery, does it bring shame or reproach upon the church? Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay? So Jesus says that when I say you, I'm talking about me too, we must be in a position that we have a good heart. What I mentioned earlier about being able to make righteousness a habit. It's not something that we have to think about. It's not something that we have to mull over. It is, as Dan says, you know, always right to do right. Okay? That becomes a part of our life. That becomes something that we, as Christians, we love righteousness. And we can be an impact in the lives of people, positive impact in the lives of people by the way that we conduct ourselves, not only in good situations, but in bad situations. And we give God all the glory. Everything that we have belongs to Him. Everything that happens in our life for good comes from God. And Jesus says, understand that there is within all of us a mindset that we must have where we look to do good. He even talks about in verse 31 and 32 about the issue of marriage. Our marriages are influential in themselves. Okay? Because if we as husbands and wives are not conducting ourselves within our marriage the way that God expects us to, it sheds a diminishing light over time to the point that it does bring shame upon the church. Jesus says we need to take into account that every aspect of our lives must be measured. And here's the measuring stick. The Bible. And he talks about divorce. I had a conversation the other day with someone about divorce. And they didn't see anything wrong. They were unhappy. They didn't like the way that things were going, so they wanted to get out of the marriage. We looked at Scripture. They didn't like what it had to say, but they had to admit that the reason that they wanted a divorce was not according to Scripture, but it was more personal. So our marriages can be very influential in the lives of the people that we come in contact with. Our words. Jesus talks about in verses 33 through 37, the fact that our words must also be measured. Going back to the matter of the heart, we must be able to think before we speak. And we tell our children that. Okay? But just as we tell our children that, then we turn around and we do the opposite. Not all the time, and I'm not talking about anybody. I'm, you know, talking about me. But it's very important that we look within these scriptures and understand that there is a great responsibility and also a great opportunity for us to be, you know, we'll never be on the 100 most influential people in America list. But we certainly can be an influential part of everybody's life that we come in contact with. And it doesn't take very much effort. You think about the things that Jesus is teaching here, and he says, all you have to do is have a good heart. You have to be a good example. You have to be able to communicate those beliefs and that love that you have for me in your life to other people. We talk to people all the time about just about everything. Football season starts tonight, for those of you that didn't know it. Ladies, I know you, this is the part of the year that you just absolutely hate. But a lot of us look forward to this part of the time. But we'll talk about football for the next several months. We'll talk about the weather. Oh, we're certainly going to be talking about politics. Okay? So the opportunity, believe it or not, the opportunity is also there for us to talk about the Word of God. And Jesus says, you make sure that you are living a life that is consistent with the things that I teach. And he also begins in verses 38 through 42 to talk about the issue of going that second mile. Okay? And that is a very positive and very powerful way to be a influence in someone's life. I've heard someone say in this class several times to be a good example. Being a good example. And what better example is there to say to someone, whatever it is that you ask of me, not only will I do it, but I go above and beyond that. Okay? And then creating that atmosphere that we can now talk about those things about God, we can talk about salvation, we can talk about doctrinal issues. Everything is open under the sun once you establish the fact that I care about you, I love God, and I'm willing to do any and everything to please him that is within his will. It creates an atmosphere and an opportunity for us to go that route. He talks about the issue of those of you that may have enemies. Those of you that may have people that do not like you very much. The majority of those people are on your jobs, right? You know? Or some of them in your neighborhoods. But he says that there is that element, even under those circumstances, that require us to still be a positive influence. Because he says, verse 43, you have heard it that was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven, for he makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends the rain on the just and on the unjust. Verse 48, therefore you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Okay, here is that opportunity for us to say to someone that we may very well know has no pleasant feelings toward us, to say that I still, despite what you do to me, despite what you say to me, I still have a genuine love for you. Not for the things that you do, not for the things that you say, but I have a genuine love for your soul that I'm willing to put up with this in order that you might be saved. Say that again.
That's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be. Absolutely. That's not an easy thing to do, though. Not all the time. Walter, that's a great point. Yes, yes. Walter brought up the fact that the scriptures say we ought to be perfect, okay? And that is to be complete, okay? Who do you know of that is without fault other than yourself? I don't know of anybody, okay? But as we look at the way that God puts expectations on us, and he says to us to study his word and to do as Paul said. Paul said, I'm going to imitate Christ. And if we imitate Christ to the very best of our ability, we will still fall short of his perfection. But we're always in the pursuit of perfection. We're always trying to get to that point that we are complete. We will never get to that point that we can say, that's it. I know the Bible backwards and forwards. I know every book in the Bible. I know every verse, and that's it. We'll never get to that point that we'll be able to say that there's nothing more for me to learn. But it does mean being complete and having an understanding of who we are, where we want to go, what we must do, and how we must live. That's life. And that's the life that God expects from us. He also talks about, in chapter 6, the issue of benevolence. He's saying, take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Okay? We do things for people simply because we want to do good. And it's not for us to do for people and say, look at me, you know, I'm a good person, I did a good thing. Everything that we do is for whom? For whose glory? For God's glory, okay? And we do these charitable deeds in order that, number one and foremost, God is revered, that he receives the credit, he receives the glory. And number two, we do them because we really want to help people. We really want to help people. Even to those people that may not think of us in a positive light, in a good light. We still have that opportunity to have an impact in their life. It may not happen today. It may not happen a week from now. It may not happen a year from now. But at some point, the good that we do will come to the point in that person's life or someone else's life that they will see not only the good, but the reason behind the good. And that is to give God the glory. He talks about the issue of prayer. And we've come to know this, and I don't particularly like the way that it's been portrayed as the Lord's Prayer. That's just on a personal note. It was an example of a prayer that Jesus said, and I take homage to the fact that it's called the Lord's Prayer because he didn't have any sins to ask forgiveness for, but that's just, that one's free. That's on me. But he says that with regards to our prayers, we can have an influence in people's lives by the way that we pray. It's not for us to get a microphone and a, what do you call those little things? Soapbox, the amplifier. Is that it with the speaker? Yeah, soapbox and amplifier. And go out and say, you know, I'm going to stand on this corner and I'm going to pray for everybody that can hear my voice. Okay, is anything wrong with that? I heard one yes. Everybody in agreement with that? Okay, now I'm asking the question, what's wrong with it? You're doing it for men and not to God. Okay?
The Jews were criticized for that standing on the corners.
Absolutely. Okay, so much for that part of my lesson. That's where I was going, but you're absolutely right. Okay? It is our prayers are to be designed in a way that God is the audience. That's who we're praying to, because man has no ability within himself to be able to accomplish anything that we ask. Okay? It is God that is able to ask and give us not only what we ask, but above and beyond what we ask. And so Jesus says in verse number 6, he says, but to you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. So Jesus says, don't be like the hypocrites. Okay, don't go out and try to show yourself to be more important than you really are. You pray to God, and that will create within itself a influence in someone's life that they see you, they hear you, and even for that person that has very little faith, and sometimes no faith at all, cannot escape the fact that you have within yourself an allegiance to God, and you believe in God, you believe in the power of prayer, and you're not ashamed of the fact that you have access to God and you're willing to use it. I've been in restaurants and I've seen people that I have known, they're not members here, but I've seen people that I know are Christians. And before they eat, they do one of these numbers. You know, that's the quickest, I don't know what it is that they say, but it's the quickest prayer that I think I've ever seen. You know, it's as if I'm embarrassed to pray and give thanks for my food. I've had this conversation with my children. When you're in school, do you give thanks for your food? There's nothing to be ashamed about. I love it when we go out to eat and we see people, you know, as families, holding hands and giving thanks for the food and not listening in on prayers, but hearing them give thanks to God for everything that they have, for the food, for the company, for the blessings that allow them to be able to go out. I think that is wonderful. And I don't even know a lot of the people, most of the people that I see doing it, but I've already formed an opinion in my head of the type of people that they are. Is that influence? Yes, absolutely. And Jesus says that our prayers have that type of ability when we do it in the right way, to the right person. He talks about the issue of fasting for those that were fasting at the time. Verse 18, in the middle of that passage, he says you do it to the Father. He talks about laying up your treasures in heaven, how we use those things that we have to give him the glory, how we're not so consumed with the fact that we have to get money and more of it. I hear songs on the radio all the time about money, 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 and how I got to get money, as if money is going to be the magic pill that's going to take us out of all of our problems. But I believe I've said this in the previous class, that there are more rich people in the offices and couches of psychiatrists than there are poor people. And it's not just because they can afford it. Problems reach across lines, and when we take this issue of money and think that we can live our life in such a way that money is the answer, then we're fooling ourselves. But if we use those blessings that God has given us in a positive way and we give him the glory, we've already impacted the life of somebody. May not know it, but we don't have to know every time that we have been a positive influence in someone's life. They don't necessarily come up to you and say, you know something, I really appreciate the way that you use your money. But they can look at the way that you use your money and say, you know, there's something about that person. There's something different about that person, and there is one of the most great compliments that you can get. You're peculiar. You're different. Now all you want them to do is ask why. And that's the opportunity that we're always looking for. He talks about the issue of the lamp of the body in verse 22 being the eye. And that is talking about the way that we process information, the way that we see things, our outlook on life. We don't always see a problem. We're always looking for those things, you know, that silver lining. There's always that thing within ourselves that we can say, this is the way that I look at life. These are the things that I expect. As bad as things are, I know I have a Father in heaven that is aware of them. I know he's promised that he's going to take care of us. And I have the confidence that I'm not going to worry about them. I'm not going to worry about whether or not I have the most stylish clothes, whether or not I have the fanciest car, whether I have the biggest house, whether I have, you know, an enormous amount of money, because God is going to give me everything that I need and most of what I want. Because believe it or not, cable is not a necessity. Nor is air conditioning. But we all have it. You know? We're spoiled. Yeah. But if we look at these lessons, and we're going to run out of time. I know we're not going to make it. But the reason that I said that this is the most comprehensive lesson on the issue of influence is because these are things that we deal with on a daily basis. And I've heard time and time again from studying with people that the Bible is outdated and it's old and we can't really pattern our life after it because, you know, it's just not doable today. There's not one thing mentioned on the Sermon on the Mount that we can't apply to our life today. There's not one thing that God has said that He's given us a commandment that we cannot do. Not one. But it all boils back down to whether or not we're willing to do it, whether or not we know what it is that He expects from us, and whether or not we're going to hold ourselves accountable to Him. We can fool mama and daddy and each other, but we can't fool God. He's always watching. He's always there. And it is within our power that He gave us to be able to accomplish everything that is expected of us. Being that light in a dark world. Because as long as we allow our light to shine, we're going to dominate that world of darkness. That immediate area around us will not be to the point that it will consume us. But it takes courage. Being a Christian, I heard someone say, is not the easiest life to live. It takes a lot of courage. Because most of the things that we're going to have to deal with in life are, we're going to be the minority. You know? You think about the issues that we face today, we're going to be the minority in a lot of those situations. And we're going to have to take a stand and say that my light is going to shine so bright that I'm going to overcome these things, and I will be happy and proud to know that I've saved not only myself, but I've created an atmosphere in your life that you're able to see within me those things that will glorify God, my good works, and it'll give you an opportunity to be saved as well. It's a humbling thing to think about when we look at the fact that the world is looking at us. And not only is the world looking at us, the world is hungry for us. I would venture to say that the majority of people in the world love knowledge. I would say that. But it is the type of knowledge that we look at and that we are willing to share that is the issue. We'll share our knowledge about investments. We'll share our knowledge about raising kids. We'll share our knowledge about how the Dolphins are going to turn things around this year. Okay? But when we start talking about issues that can be controversial and we have to take a stand and say, this is where I am, and I'm very rigid when it comes to those things that are spiritual and biblical, and I'm not going to deviate one way or the other, well, then that's where the courage comes in. But everything that Jesus said with regards to letting your light shine is 100% doable. And we are Christians, the happiest people on the face of the earth, without doubt, because we always have that hope. No matter how bad things get, no matter how bad the health gets in our lives, we always have hope, and we always have access to God. And that is within itself one of the greatest joys that a Christian can have, knowing that nothing happens in my life that the Father in heaven does not know about. I did all this talking, and I apologize if I talk too much. I wanted to go through a lot of things, and I know, and that required me to talk a lot. Okay, so I hope I didn't step on anybody's toes, but we got about a minute, right? 2 minutes? Oh, good. Anyone want to add something to what we've talked about? Anybody want to say anything to me? Well, I'll close with this. We have a unique opportunity as Christians. And that unique opportunity is to be able to save a lost soul by doing two things: by communicating and being a good example. And that opportunity, as everybody knows, comes around not so much all the time, but you have to sometimes create an opportunity for yourself. It's almost like what you tell your children, you know. You create an opportunity. You make an opportunity where there is no opportunity. And once we take that mindset and we begin to do those things, and it becomes a part of our life to the point that righteousness is there and it's not something that we got to grab at. I know, looking at this crowd, I can put you in any situation and I know how you're going to react. I know how you're going to react because of the type of people that you are, because of where your heart is, and because of the love that you have for Jesus and the love that you have for this book. Take advantage of these opportunities. Somebody took an opportunity to teach you about the gospel, and you'll be forever thankful on the day of judgment that they did. Thank you for your time.